You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 242. 42. Four.
Two.
Welcome to the Punkins Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you for one of the last times in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
No, you're quitting the podcast, Adam.
I know. Actually, I'm moving. So soon I will be recording in a different basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. So everyone can be cool. Joining me on tonight's show, you heard him screaming out of Philadelphia, PA, Mr. John Gentile.
Hey.
And out there in the land of sunshine and cocaine. I have such a dim view of Los Angeles. Mr. Ricky Frankel.
Yeah. You need to come out here and just kind of see, like, it's not just Hollywood and lots of cocaine. Or it hasn't been like that for a while, at least.
You know what? There's a conference that I go to or try to go to every year for work, and I'm not doing it this year because I'm going to be having a kid right around the time when it's happening. But at the end of each year's conference, they announce where the next one is going to be. And they're usually places that I'm really excited to go. So, like, the last one was in Austin, and I'd never been to Austin, and I thought that was really cool to get out there. And we've done Chicago before. We've done Denver, where I got together with punk news writer Brittany Strummer and went to Illegal Pete's for burritos. Wow. This year it's in Los Angeles, and when they announced it, I remember that, like, I saw the announcement and I was just kind of like, all right. For some reason I had just like no emotional reaction to it at all. Like, I've gone out to ones that have been in like San Francisco before and I was super stoked to go there, so it's not like an anti-California thing. It was just like, oh, all right, Los Angeles. Like, my immediate thought was just like, and I've never been there, so I have nothing to justify this on, was I was just like, oh, that'll be a pain in the ass.
Do you know where in Los Angeles it was going to be?
I don't know. I'm sure it's on fire.
Listen, this city in the, like, it to the rest of the world, I think it's just such a fucking joke, because only certain very small portions of it get the most attention. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if everyone's thinking right now, oh yeah, that's where the Kardashians live, that's where Bieber lives. And while, like, it's bigger than some states, the county is bigger than some states out here. So yeah, but I totally get why people hate Los Angeles. I heard, who did I hear talking about? I forgot. I was listening to some podcast talking about why they don't like Los Angeles, and I get it. You know, the traffic here is just fucking awful. So
let's see here. The Los Angeles Convention Center, which is, I don't know, at the corner of the Santa Monica Freeway and the 110.
Yeah, I think that's downtown.
Staples Center.
Oh yeah, that is downtown. That's where the Lakers play. And like, okay. Yeah.
So what's that place got? Like plagues or dinosaurs or bands of, I don't know.
Staples Center is like, I mean, LA Convention Center, that's like where the LA Auto Show is held. God. And then like the Staples Center is like where the big concerts happen. Like, I saw Kiss there when I was like 15.
How much cocaine did you do there, Ricky?
At the Kiss concert?
Well, in general. I mean, how much coke have you done today?
I don't, you know what? That's, nah. Don't do that. I don't do that. I don't go that way.
You are just so humble for being from such a horrible, horrible place.
Hey, even Jack Terrycloth rips on Los Angeles on the New World Inferno album too, which I asked him about. So I get why people hate it here, and I get why people think it's such a joke here. But you know,
so I just dropped the Google Street View guy in the middle of wherever, and all I see here is highway and.
Cocaine.
I don't know. The air doesn't look too good to me, Ricky. It's kind of like this white haze.
That's the cocaine on the Google Maps filter.
Well, the air is not good. I remember going up to school the first time in NorCal and noticing how much better the air is up there. And also, there's no fucking public transportation here, like hardly any. So that's because everyone's driving cars, and you know I'm in a valley, so you have to go over hills and through canyons. So there's no like
valley, a charitable way of saying ditch. Or...
No, valley is like a legitimate like it's like a big ass hole in the ground, just miles long, miles long,
full of monster bats and. all right, so to date this podcast, it was April Fool's. We had fools on Punk News in the morning. John, you spearheaded the whole initiative. People can go back and read all the details of it, but. Do you want to give me like a little recap of what happened, and then we're gonna play a sort of quasi related tune, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be very briefly. You know, on April Fools, we usually do something wacky or something funny. I took over April Fools 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we did wacky stories, but honestly, as the director, I wasn't strict enough. And 2 years ago, I didn't think it was that good. Last year, I was stricter, and basically, I demanded better content from the writers, and they delivered. And I think last year was really, really good. We did wacky articles last year. So because last year was very good with wacky articles, we decided we wanted to do something different this year. And so Adam Eisenberg, news editor Adam E., he had the idea is, what if we posted a whole bunch of van break-ins, and it turned out that Masked Intruder was responsible for the van break-ins, which was really funny, a really good idea. So it's not like one wacky article, it's a slow-burning joke. The problem is I said, but people are going to guess that, and if they guess the jig before the jig's up, then we look foolish. So what we came up with was, it turns out that Masked Intruder didn't actually do the break-ins, but it was old man Mark Lee, and they would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you meddling punks. So in an homage to Scooby-Doo. I realize that explaining a joke entirely kills it, but what can you do? And so anyway, I was very pleased with the way it came out because it was a slow burn and we outsmarted the commenters each time. Because when we first, the first van break-in, they were like, this better be an April Fool's. And then once it was clear after we had like four or five van break-ins, they're like, oh, I bet it was Mass Intruder. And then when we posted Mass Intruder was arrested, they were like, see, we knew it was Mass Intruder. But then when we posted it was actually old man Markley, we outsmarted him every step of the way. So I was glad we had the foresight to beat the haters, if you will, and there were small hints to old man Markley in almost all the articles, and if you go back and read them, you'll find them. As always, I'll just reiterate this: the commenters do not represent the punk news readership. We got a lot of hate in the comments section, but go to the Facebook, go to the Twitter. It's almost universal love. Some of the articles got an insane amount of love. So as always, the commenters do not represent the views of punk news readership as a whole, and generally are the opposite. It's actually. Anyway, but we also had a double whammy joke in that around noon or 1 o'clock, we said, okay, that's it. Joke's over. Let's do serious ones. And then we posted a new song by Nightbirds that Nightbirds sent to us. And this is, I think we should just play. I don't think we should explain it. I think here's the song that Nightbirds sent to us on April Fools. And they said, this is the first taste of their new album coming out on this year on Fat Records. And the tune is called Dos Principes. Yeah.
John, you got to speak more Spanish to us. It's just super sexy.
My Spanish is actually okay because I took Spanish in elementary school and middle school and high school. So, I mean, it's not great, but I can understand what Spanish speakers are saying, and I can read the Spanish newspaper, but I'm horrible at speaking it. Me llamo Juan. ¿Cómo estás?
All right, that's legitimately more Spanish than I know. So we're going to talk about some stuff that happened this past week. The big one, and I have to say that this story came to my attention not through our normal channels, but because, from what I understand, Ben Weasel started tweeting about it to further the, I don't know, the carnival of Schadenfreude or whatever.
Schadenfreude.
So anyways.
Adam, can I just pause you? Ben Weasel quoting German probably is not Ben Weasel's best strategy, if you get what I'm saying.
So, all right, Off With Their Heads was involved in an onstage altercation. So one of the last Fridays in March here, Off With Their Heads, their show ended early. Well, with frontman Ryan Young leaving stage mid-set. Now, at the time, there doesn't appear to be footage or anything of what happened, but there's a lot of stories that are out there. And the problem with this is that a lot of these stories are, I think, fueling the Ben Weasel perception of what went on here, but it's all just kind of like social media chatter, so it's not stuff that we can really take and use. But we do have a statement that Ryan posted, so I'll get to that in a sec. Basically, some stuff was thrown at Young. He was hit. He confronted the audience a bit, and then he left. So, should I read his statement?
I think you should read the whole thing, even though it's long. I think it's worthwhile.
All right. I'm gonna read his statement, and I mean probably the best place to get Ryan's version of this, not that that's necessarily the truth, mind you, but Ryan's version of this would be on his own podcast, which I am totally blanking on the name of. So one of you look up what that's called while I am reading this.
It's called Anxious and Angry.
There you go. Anxious and Angry. Anyways, okay, cool. So anyways, here we go. Ryan Young. A bit about the show in Cincinnati, Newport last night. The tour has been great. Every show was fun. We had a blast with every crowd every night until last night. One of the reasons that we stopped doing this band for a year was because we didn't like the vibe at the shows. There have been some people that genuinely connect with the music in one way or another, and there have been dickheads that seem to get off on ruining everyone's night. I remember a friend of mine told me that I didn't need to break our band up. I just needed to remember that at the end of the day, I don't owe anyone a single thing. We went into this tour with that attitude, and we have never connected with each other or the crowd as much as this run. Last night, as I was singing songs about my dead parent that I was thinking about all day, people were throwing bottles and cans at my head. I don't really enjoy when I'm thinking about the sight of a person turning purple in a hospice bed. I don't enjoy that when I'm thinking about the sight of a person turning purple in a hospice bed. I gave warning number one, continued to play, even though I was fucking pissed. Then a bottle of Jack Daniels hit me in the head. I stopped the show and asked who did it. It was some girl in the front row. I shoved her away from the stage with my foot and tossed a little snot her way. Fair compensation for a bottle off to the head while I was thinking about my loved one turning from purple to green. Strike two. I gave it another shot. Then I caught a can in the forehead. Done. Fuck that. I don't have to take shit from people. I gave multiple warnings. If you can't control yourself and not threaten the band playing, then I'm leaving. And that's what I did. For the first time in 13 years of being in this band, I walked off stage and I didn't come back. It was the exact same feeling of a bunch of shitty jocks high-fiving each other while calling people faggots. I also happened to notice that my friends in pairs get a slightly less aggressive version of this shit. Point being, I'm not sorry for any of this. I feel bad for the people that drove to the show from far away, especially the person who came all the way from Florida. But if I'm going to continue to do this for the people that get the same mental release as we do, a line has to be drawn. Also, don't try and take and do the "this is a punk show" excuse. That's called the idiot's excuse. If you think that me standing up for myself and my friends isn't punk, then that's just fine with me. Don't come to our shows. We've sacrificed much more than a night off of our couch for doing the thing that we love. Not going to let some assholes ruin it anymore. That's all that needs to be said about all of this. So there you go. That's Ryan's statement. He That's it. That's what we kind of left it at on Punk News. I guess we'll turn this over to you. So there's a couple ways that we can take this, folks. I guess we could talk about if what Ryan did was appropriate or not. We could also, although, compare this to the Ben Weasel blow up, and you know, does it even compare?
Yes, it compared. I think we should talk about both, actually. But I've been thinking about the Ben Weasel thing a lot. You know, I mean, this is crazy. Like, once every two or three months, Ben Weasel will, like, post, like, a four-year-old Punk News article and be like, how come this guy gets treated differently than I do? Like, the biggest person reminding everyone that Ben Weasel hits women or hit a woman is Ben Weasel. Like, he brings it up all the time, you know? And he says, it doesn't bother me, I don't care. But he clearly does, because he's constantly tweeting at Punk News about how we treat him differently than other people or whatever. And actually, he even went into our Facebook section and like was talking trash on us, but then blocked us like as soon as he came in. So he basically did a drive-by commenting, if you will. He jumped in, commented, and then blocked us so we couldn't respond. But there's really three big cases to look at. The Ben Weasel, the Fat Mike incident where Fat Mike had a sore neck, was playing on stage. Some guy jumped up on stage, like wrapped around Fat Mike's neck, so Fat Mike kicked him twice. And then also this one. Let's deal with the Fat Mike one first. That's a lot easier. Ben Weasel is constantly boo-hooing. And I don't want to make Ben Weasel a superstar, but it's an interesting topic. So let's talk about it. I mean, that's my perspective. You know what I mean? And I don't think it is completely black and white, honestly. The Fat Mike issue is easy to rule out. Because in the Fat Mike issue, two reasons. The lesser reason is that someone was on stage and physically was like hurting Mike. So if someone's physically hurting you, you can hurt them back. That's pretty much the rule. But even more so, after Mike beat up the kid or kicked him or whatever, the kid said, oh, it's not a big deal, I forgive you guys. So if the injured party forgives the band, then no one else can be angry. You know what I mean? There is no injured party. You can't be angry on an injured party if the injured party isn't angry or isn't injured, you know? And also, Ben Weasel's like, how can you guys treat me different than Fat Mike? It's because two reasons, I guess. The funnier one is because Mike doesn't make it a point to be an asshole in every situation possible. I mean, Ben Weasel constantly is provoking and saying mean things and being a jerk to people. Like, remember, like, when he, out of nowhere, he played the Max Levine ensemble on his radio show and went on like, a 20-minute tangent about how much that Max Levine sucked for, like, no reason, the band? It's just him being an asshole. Now, you could argue, well, he's just trying to be a Johnny Rotten-style punk provocateur. And maybe that's so, but on the other, but then he wants to be an agitated punk provocateur, but then he wants everybody to like him. Even Johnny Rotten doesn't want everybody to like him, you know. So Ben Weasel's wrong about that. The Fat Mike situation is 100% different, or a great deal different than the Ben Weasel situation. So Ben Weasel crying about how Fat Mike is treated differently than Ben Weasel is A, because Fat Mike isn't constantly an asshole. I mean, Fat Mike is an asshole sometimes, but he's not constantly an asshole, and he's not a bully, which I guess is more important. Also, though, Fat Mike, like, made moves to fix a situation, and he did, you know, and Ben Weasel just didn't. Now, maybe it's because Fat Mike is better at PR, or maybe Fat Mike is just more a likable person, but that's the difference, you know. The difference isn't that anyone has an agenda against Ben Weasel. The difference is that Ben Weasel is an asshole, and he's reaping the rewards of that. Now, the more difficult question, Ryan Young. And honestly, I do feel as though Ben Weasel might have been treated a little harshly by the punk rock community. But then Ben Weasel damaged himself even further. If you recall, what happened at the Ben Weasel show at South by Southwest, a girl spit an ice cube at him, hit him, which is totally lame, and you should not spit on anybody, like, ever. And so he lashed out and punched her. You know, and then he was drug off stage, and maybe he hit the lady dragging him off stage, or maybe he didn't. Who knows? That's irrelevant, right, for this conversation. What he could have done is said, you know what? Someone spit on me. I didn't know who it was, and I just lashed out instinctually. I didn't mean to hit a woman. I did hit a woman. It wasn't on purpose, and I really shouldn't have done that. I apologize. You know what? And then everyone would have forgotten about it in a week. But instead, he went on how, you know, he's this big martyr, and you know, everyone's picking on him. And he's like, you shouldn't spit on me, and that's why I was allowed to hit this woman. You never want to be in a position where you're arguing why it's okay for you to hit a woman. You know what I mean? If you're a man. And so Ben Weasel just played it entirely poorly, and he keeps bringing it up. But the situation here is kind of similar, honestly. What happened was, in this situation, a girl threw a bottle of Jack Daniels at Ryan Young, And so what he did is he spit on her, and then he either shoved her with his foot or kicked her. You know, Ben Weasel said he kicked her. Ryan Young says he shoved her with his foot, which is possible, although I don't know how you shove somebody with your foot, you know? So I think maybe he gave her a kick, but not like a roundhouse kick, you know what I mean? I think he shouldn't – I mean, I think he was perfectly in his right to spit on her. Well, A, you shouldn't ever throw bottles at anybody ever. I mean, like that can really hurt somebody. So that was entirely lame for that girl to do. And I can understand how people lash out in a situation like that, you know? And so he definitely was in the right to spit on her. I mean, if someone throws a bottle at you, I think you can spit on them. That's fine. You know, was he in the right to kick her? I mean, if it was a guy, I would say 100% yes. But it's because it's a girl, in my mind, it's a little different. I know you could say that's sexist, but that's just the way I feel. I think it's okay. I think it's more okay for a man to hit another man than it is for a man to hit a woman. And if that's sexist, well, then that's sexist. What can I say?
I don't know if I'm just like picturing my local venue where I go to see shows. And if I was to be pushed away from the front of the stage by the person on the stage, they would have to use their foot given that they're on the stage.
Yeah. So, he's holding a guitar too.
This is going to come down to like, you know, this would be great if we had like, if this was a TV show and we had like the Punk News physics professor that could all of a sudden pop in and be like, I'm like, all right guys, let's talk about the difference between a push and a kick, and it's all about momentum or something, right? And then they could do a little cartoon with you know, graphs and stuff. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it's kind of problematic that, let's just say it's a kick, right? It's kind of problematic that he kicks anyone really that was in the front of his show. But on the other hand, I'm looking at it and thinking that like a Jack Daniel's bottle is a pretty heavy bottle. Like even when empty, it's also, I don't know, I'm looking like, it's not a round bottle. There's some corners on it. The kind of bottle that I would necessarily want to be hit with if I had my choice of bottles. It would be really low on the list of ones that I would want lobbed at my head. So I can empathize with the fact that he would be really pissed off after being hit in the head with a Jack Daniel's bottle while on stage. And I guess I also got to come with this. And this is by no means justifying anything, but like, what kind of show allows you to have like a full fucking liquor bottle in front of it? Is like, is this a thing you guys do down there in, I don't know where you're from. You represent everywhere. Adam, Cincinnati.
This must be a Midwest thing, because you definitely cannot do this in California, and cannot do this in Philadelphia.
No, I think I read in the comments of one of these posts on Facebook was that I think security either wasn't there or they just missed her.
Well, I mean, how can you stop that? I mean, security can't, like, zap a bottle out of midair. It takes a second to throw a bottle. You know what I mean?
No, but I mean, like, security would see someone taking swigs out of a Jack bottle.
But maybe they have bottle service there. Like, at hip-hop shows, they might have bottle service.
No, I don't think they do. I think what I saw was that this girl snuck it in.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be great if this was, like, one of those little one-shot novelty bottles, and the whole story is actually like really really skewed, because it was like one of those little plastic, like you know, you get them in the mini bar fridge in your hotel room bottles.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be cool. Then don't kick someone if you get hit with a mini fridge bottle.
Did either of you listen to the explanation on the Ancient Angry podcast?
I did, yes.
Post one already. Oh, I was just speculating that he was going to post one. All right.
Oh, no, it's up. It's episode 60. And he talked about it. He was very unapologetic about the whole thing. I think he was more pissed that it was actually such a big thing. He was unapologetic for standing up for himself. I think he said, though, that he really just kind of pushed the girl away with his foot. I don't think it was a kick.
I don't know, man. I mean,
that's what he says. And honestly, I don't know if you guys are like longtime listeners of the show, but I am, and he is an extremely candid, extremely honest. So I tend to, honestly, through a whole show, I don't think he's lying. I believe him. And he wasn't like angry about it. He just kind of just said he wanted to be a very brief statement about what happened. He went into detail about it. I believe him. When it comes to the comparing it to like the Fat Mike and the Ben Weasel one, Fat Mike made it better. He even, both of them apologized. Even the guy that got up on stage and put his arm around Fat Mike even said, I was like, you know, shit-faced hammered when I got up on stage and I barely remember it happening. And this girl was drunk too. When it, and but that whole no, Fat Mike situation was fixed like the next day. I don't know. Ben Weasel's just sort of a dick.
Well,
and I mean, he didn't. The thing is, there's from what I can tell, the difference between the Ryan Young and the Ben Weasel one is that Ryan Young told these people to stop two times before he walked off stage.
Yeah, true. But
Ben Weasel didn't give any warning. Sometimes shit gets thrown up on stage. You know, I've seen underwear, I've seen bras get thrown up on stage. I've seen bottles and cans and shoes and hats.
That just happens to you, Ricky, when you're just going about life.
Ricky's walking down the street like bras are getting thrown
on stage. Oh, on stage. Anyway, yeah. Now I've lost my train of thought. but yeah, I don't blame him for sticking up for himself. I think it could have gotten a lot worse. It takes a lot to get on stage. I don't care how long you've been doing it. It takes a lot of just focus and balls to get on stage and do that for an hour or, you know, less. So you're already if you listen to the podcast, you know he's a tense guy. He's very candid. He's just a tense guy thinking about other shit, and he has other things on his mind, and he's trying to do the best he can up there. I gotta tell you, I think he was completely right. It could have gotten a lot uglier. It could have gone the Ben Weasel way, but he was cool enough not to make it go that way because he knew the repercussions of what was going to happen.
Well, actually, that's a great point. That's a great point. And that, A, I don't think he was entirely right. I don't think he should have kicked or pushed the girl. I think he should have had her thrown out. That being said, it's not the worst thing in the world when I don't think he was tactical about it. I think it was out of instinct. You know what I mean? So it's not the worst thing in the world when someone throws a bottle at you that you strike out against them. So I don't think he should have done that, but I think that's a forgivable thing that he did. Here's the difference between Ben Weasel and him. Ben Weasel, prior to the incident, cultivated this personality of being an angry, pissed-off guy that just randomly attacks people. Ryan Young does not have that. That means when Ryan Young does make a mistake, people are more willing to forgive him because he's been less of an asshole to people. That's just how life works. If you're generally a nice person, you're going to get a little bit more rope when you make a mistake than if you're belligerent, mean, and you pick on other people. So,
But just to that point, I think Ryan Young was... I'm just trying to visualize this. I bet he was way more restrained about the situation than most people would be.
I wish we had video. I mean, because Ben Weasel like gave that girl a haymaker, you know.
Oh yeah,
and I'd be interested to see if this was a push or a kick. And I've got a tangential existential thing about this. If you guys are done about this topic, but if you guys want to talk about this.
I can keep going.
My point is this: is that, you know, I've never been. I mean, I don't really drink. I might have like a Mike's Hard lemonade once a year, once every other year. But I don't really drink. I don't do any drugs. I don't smoke. But I've never been Mr. Straight Edge. I really don't think drinking is that big of a deal. I don't think smoking cigarettes or cigars is really that big of a deal either. But the older I get, the more straight edge I become, and I've almost become of the position that perhaps like the org core mentality is self destructive. We've got a lot of org core groups that sing about how great it is to drink whiskey, how great it is to drink, how great it is to get drunk with your friends, that being said, is there's all these songs about how great alcohol is and how great it is that if your life is in a bad place, you can drink with your friends and things feel okay. I almost wonder if it's like the land of the lotus eaters, and I wonder if that, you know, a lot of people that like org core and stuff, you know, maybe aren't where they want to be in their life. And I wonder if instead of celebrating alcohol and spending all this time getting drunk and saluting alcohol, you know, this heavy drinking culture that we have, this culture that celebrates getting drunk, this culture that celebrates getting whiskey, I wonder if that in part keeps people in situations they don't want to be in. You see what I'm saying?
I do. I can say from my experiences, I'm not. I know a few episodes ago we talked about our first times getting drunk. I don't really do that anymore. I haven't for a long time. But what I do make a rule though, I don't drink at shows. just because usually I'm driving and there's no real other way to get to the shows from where I am. But I mean, it's possible, but I think you notice like a lot of bands when they're on tour, it seems like they're just kind of, I don't know if it's self-medicating, but I don't know if they're so bored while they're on tour before the show and after.
I'm not just talking about bands. I'm talking about the fans.
Oh, fans too. I mean, listen, I think fans just think it's a giant party, and there's always that one asshole that gets way too drunk and is just, you know, trying to start a pit or just bothering people. So I think there is a drinking culture within it.
Is that self-destructive or is it supportive as it claims to be?
I think I don't want to say in moderation because it's definitely not moderate, but some of it, I think when people just go and have a few drinks and maybe get, you know, tipsy on stuff, it's fine. But once you start becoming either violent or like passing out on the floor, I've seen that happen before. Or just like, you know, puking everywhere, then that's when it becomes self-destructive. When you start relying on it to have fun instead of focusing on like on the show, that's when it becomes a problem.
So you think all these org core songs about how great it is to drink whiskey with your friends, you think those songs are not self-destructive?
I think if you don't take them super seriously, I don't think it should be, you know, like you're reading like every word should be taken seriously. It's just about fun and different kinds of fun, really. And those party lyrics, I don't think they're doing it drinking like that every day. If you are, then there's a bigger problem at hand.
Maybe that's my issue, and I know Adam has something to say. I'm sorry, Adam, but I think a lot of org core punkers do drink like that every day or almost every day, and they're like these songs say that's okay. You know, maybe that's my issue. I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
Well, see, I think I've cracked the code on this one. Okay. Now, I say we're having this conversation, and I'm holding my second drink of the evening in my hand right now, so I'm maybe not the, on the one hand, I'm not gonna take the teetotaler line here, but on the other hand, this is my second drink right now. So.
Yeah, but Adam, generally speaking, you're where you want to be in your life, aren't you?
Well, that is my point, though. So here's the thing. The folks that are putting together these, let's keep using the term orgcore, the folks that are making this music, right? They tend to be guys that are, they're our age or maybe a little bit older, but not much older, right? Like they're generally in our cohort. I have a feeling that the people that are getting obnoxiously drunk at their shows are people that are in their early 20s.
True.
And,
good point.
And the people that are writing this music are people that are in their early to mid 30s. Now, let me tell you something that I have discovered, and it's funny because I got this from I saw this on Twitter not like a few years ago from Justin August, one of our former punk news editors, and shit if it isn't true. Now, I'm a huge fan of alcohol. Let me tell you. but that said, I'm becoming old in this really lame way where I'll have like, let's say a total of 3 drinks. And then I'll be like, woof, like if I drink any more, I'm not going to feel good. So now I'm going to stop. Right. And it's not, it's like, I don't know. Like there's no unlimited whiskey party for me. It's like, my body is just like, wow, you've had 3 drinks. You feel really good. You are absolutely going to stop now, because if you have more than this, you will not feel good for like 4 or 5 reasons, because you're fucking old now. So, ha ha ha, right? And that's kind of what happens. So, on the one hand, I could absolutely empathize with a song talking about, you know, that good whiskey is good. I'm cool with that. I can deal with that. But, you know, push comes to shove, don't give me more than a couple of those, because I can't do it, right? So now I'm thinking that, like, I wonder if, like, you know, all these songs should have, like, some sort of little asterisk next to them, and they'll be like, but when you're old, you know, your crazy whiskey party time is going to be like, you know, a couple of drinks and then you reminisce about college or something. Like, it's not going to be you're going crazy in the pit and throwing bottles at people. So I don't know. I think there's a disconnect there.
Yeah, I would like to know how old the girl was in the Ryan Young situation, because I just got out of the whole, oh my God, I'm 21 now, I can drink, let's just drink whatever we can, you know, and if it's in public, fine, let's just do whatever, and let's see if we can do it drunk. So I remember
that is adorable.
But now, you know, I've been able to buy alcohol on my own for like, you know, for 2-3 years now, and it's just kind of worn off. I don't really care anymore. And
so this is why I'm a huge advocate of the drinking age in Canada, or at least in my part of Canada.
What is it, 18?
I think it's 19, but and of course, like, so when we were in high school, we would drink like I'm assuming that this girl with the bottle at the show were drinking. We would go, you know, sneak over to whoever's parents were out of town's house or the fucking woods or something, right? And then we would just binge drink like idiots, yeah. Right? Just so that we could see, like, how many people can we get, like, consecutively really stupid drunk at once, right? And it was totally irresponsible, and none of us were drinking to enjoy it. We was just drinking to, like, woo, we're going to go get drunk. It's a party, right? And I get that. But then, so, yeah, and then you're 19, and you can go and you know, buy your own stuff. But to me, I don't know. I don't know what my perspective on it would have been if I would have had to wait until I was 21 to do that.
Well, like, imagine
I'm basically an adult, but I have to sneak around and secret drink still. Like, that would feel kind of demeaning. It'd probably break me.
I mean, imagine being in, you know, in college for 2+ years and you're still not able to drink anything. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, they introduced that problem up here because this is, I'm sure, super interesting to all the punk rock people. But we used to there used to be like a in our high school here, like, there used to be like a 13th grade that you could be in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't called like grade 13 or anything like that. It was called like, in Ontario, it was called OAC, which I don't remember what it was. Some sort of Ontario thing. It's basically like college prep.
Yeah.
And mostly people that went to like college, university in Ontario, they would have gone to that grade 13 to do all their college prep stuff while they were in high school. And then they would have gone. That's what I did. But when I was in school, it was like the last or the second last year that they did that. So they took that away. So people would just do all that stuff in 12th grade and then go to college, university. But that meant that all of a sudden there was this overlap where there was a bunch of people that were coming into the colleges and universities that were 18. And they couldn't legally drink, but they were like at college where like there had never been that problem before. It was really weird for a while. Well, anyways, that's super interesting.
I gotta point out the drinking age in the USA is 18, but states enforce a 21 plus drinking age. FYI. Well,
and just to go back to what you guys were saying, I mean, where I went to school, Northern California, they I mean, it's 21 here, but I'm not kidding. It was easier. It was much, much easier and even safer to just get a ton of weed from someone else's grow house. then try and get beer or alcohol or any other kind of alcohol. It was ridiculous.
I had
it wasn't Los Angeles. It was
I just love the idea of like Ricky toking like in a Cheech and Chong type adventure.
I did not partake. I didn't like it. I really was just frustrated for 2 years that I couldn't get alcohol. But but yeah, I mean, there are people that lived like Mendocino County, Nevada County, like north of Sacramento, which is way up there, and their parents like would have legal grow operations in their house, but it was like for medicinal purpose only. But they'd really just bring it down so they could have it at school, and it was easier to get that than going to a liquor store. It was kind of ridiculous, but anyway.
One last thing to wrap up this Ryan Young story. I was really glad to see this because I'm always so embarrassed when touring bands come to Philadelphia because Philadelphia crowds get so drunk and so belligerent. So I'm glad that Philadelphia is not the worst city for touring bands. But speaking of education, Rodney Anonymous, the Dead Milkman, currently appeared in a online puppet show. The puppet show is called Welcome to Anhedonia, and Rodney Anonymous of the Dead Milkman appeared as the spokesman for College University. Basically, in the video, one of the guys says he's going to apply for college, so he puts in one of these college intro videos, and Rodney Anonymous appears as a spokesman trying to get the main guy to go to that college. Did you guys watch this? Did you find it as hilarious as I did? And did you enjoy the true, I guess, really the most pristine form of the Philadelphia accent, which Rodney Anonymous has? He sounds extremely Philadelphian, and I gotta say, I've tried to shed that accent myself, because it really is not an attractive accent.
I didn't actually know that that was an accent. I just thought that's kind of how he sounded.
But I've never heard
like a bunch of Philadelphia people in a room together. So
that is the Philadelphia accent. And I love Rodney, and I kind of speak that way myself too, but it is not an attractive accent.
I thought this was super funny. It reminded me a lot of there was a comedy troupe from Nova Scotia a few years ago that was doing a lot of like really kinetic, wacky YouTube things called Picnic Face. And they used to do a lot of kind of crazy videos, and this sort of reminded me of one of theirs. I've never seen this show before, so I guess it's mostly with puppets and stuff usually, which is okay, which is kind of awesome. I actually want to go back and watch more of these because they were they were goofy, and they appealed to me with their dumbness. But yeah, I have no context. I've never seen any of this this comedy troupes or sketch troupe or whatever this is. I haven't seen this show before, so it was cool.
Yeah, I haven't either. This was kind of this had that like Adult Swim edgy,
yeah,
like demented kind of a thing. Like I could totally see this running for like 15 minutes on Adult Swim, like really late at night, after like Metalocalypse or whatever. But no, this is funny. I liked it. I mean, I think even FX, it could probably be on there too. But I got like a Adult Swim Avenue Q kind of vibe, which is cool.
So, John, how did this come across your plate?
I got sent a sketchy press release, and I hate sketchy press releases. They're press releases that tried to get you to post something on a premise that isn't exactly real. And the premise that it was sent, and I don't mean to talk, I'm trying to give this guy advice, if you will, is the press release made it seem like that Rodney Anonymous was the star of this and he's going to continue to be the star of this puppet show. And I'm glad I investigated it. And he's really just like a momentary guest star on one episode, you know what I mean? And so I got sent this press release and I thought it was cool. But the press release didn't match up to what it actually was, you know. And my point is this, is if you ever send out press releases, don't try to make it semi-true. Make it as true as you can and then really laud or put laud the best parts of what you're trying to pitch. Don't try to shoehorn in things that aren't exactly true.
Man, as someone that's been on the receiving end of press releases for like 15 years, I've never had a person that in my mind truly does it the way that I would want it.
Yeah.
Which is I want someone to like, you know, sure, write me a friendly little intro, but like, hey Adam, here's this thing that's going on. But then give me all of the chunks of information that I could possibly need to make my life as easy as possible when doing that article. Like, what was the band's previous record called? Make it in the fucking thing so I can just copy it out of there, right? Have I got to paste tour dates into the story? Well, give them to me in a way that's not insane so I don't have to like rewrite them to put them in a story. I don't know. Like,
what are the names of the people in the band?
Like stuff that seems totally rudimentary, but like if I got to go do, you know, 10 minutes of, you know, Google dicking around to actually write the story because you got, you know, really clever in your fun, funky press release. Well, you know, I barely have time to do anything, let alone write about your shitty band. Make it really super easy for me to do that. Oy. So, yeah, this was fun. You guys should go see it. The link is on Punk News. We've talked for a long time. I'm going to play some music. This is... we've dated ourselves already on this show. So we mentioned it was April 1st recently. One of the things that happened on April 1st was the Brooklyn-based band Obits, which is the band that features is the current vehicle for singer guitarist Rick Froberg, who you guys all know from Pitchfork and Rocket from the Crypt and Hot Snakes and Drive Like Jehu. It's his current band. They called it quits. Well, they called it quits on April Fool's, and then they had to like come back afterwards and be like, no, like we're actually breaking up. This wasn't like a, So anyways, Obits is breaking up. It kind of sucks. If you haven't heard them, they were the kind of more like indie garage rocky version of, you know, Hot Snakes or something like that. You know, definitely Rick, on guitar, Rick on vocals, you know, Rick doing crazy album art for them, all the stuff that you like about Rick, maybe a little bit less aggressive than Hot Snakes. So, you know, definitely a different kind of band, different kind of vibe, but hey, it's Rick Froberg and he's amazing. So anyways, this is a song from their first record, from their album from, what was it, 2009 on Sub Pop. The album was called I Blame You. This song is called Pine On. So this is Obits, and they just broke up. We're back. That was Obits. You guys should go check out their stuff. We did not talk about that band all that much on Punk News for whatever reason, but you know, you should go check it out. We're gonna talk about
musicians of a completely different
ilk.
Class is not the right word. What am I looking for here?
Ilk breed.
Tax brackets. So, hey, an army of pop superstars, led by Jay-Z, have announced a new music streaming service to compete with your Spotify's and your RDOs and your Beats and all that stuff. So, Jay-Z has gone and started this company, which is to say that Jay-Z went and spent, I think it was $56-59 million to buy this company from some Europeans that had it. And the company is called Tidal. And he announced it in this crazy bonkers press. What was it? It was a
press meeting.
Press meeting, some sort of junket. It was weird. In New York City, that featured Alicia Keys, Wynn Butler of the Arcade Fire, Beyonce, Daft Punk, Jack White, Jay-Z, Kanye West, Deadmau5, Madonna, Nicki Minaj, Rihanna, Usher, Chris Martin, of Coldplay, and basically anyone that has dominated modern pop radio charts in the past little while was involved in this sucker. So they were all there on hand to launch this thing. So the artists have stated that Tidal is a different form of music streaming because it is at least partially artist owned, and all of the acts who I just named, they have an ownership interest. The other thing that they're touting here is that this is a high fidelity streaming service. So when you're streaming music off of Tidal, the music is of CD quality sound. There's apparently 25 million songs in their catalog. It's all high def and et cetera, et cetera. It's about double the price of any of the existing music streaming services, but they say that's what you're getting for top shelf shit. So Tidal was announced, the internet kind of went it felt like because they announced it in a way that was super weird, where a lot of the artists that were involved in this, they were trying to start some sort of viral thing. I don't know if you guys saw this. They're trying to start this viral thing where they were like changing their Twitter avatar blue in support of Tidal or something like that. Like, that's how it was worded. Really? Clearly there was some sort of social media marketing plan, and it was handed out to all of the, the marketing handlers of these acts who, actually post most of the things to their social profiles. And you had a whole bunch of bands that like all of a sudden started posting like this creepily similar, I'm doing this in support of Tidal, but like using those words, like in support of, like it was a charity and not like a bunch of millionaires who bought a piece of software from some Norwegians. Like they were trying to make it sound like it was a revolution that was coming. And the internet kind of looked at that and collectively sort of called bullshit on it, which I thought was great because the internet's good for doing that kind of thing. So, goofy press release, was goofy. So I guess, again, there's two angles on this one. I don't even know if we need to discuss this one. A, wasn't that a fucking goofy thing that they did? And B, is this a worthwhile thing?
Yeah, I guess it was kind of goofy. I guess they said, well, if we get all these superstars, the internet will pay attention to them.
It was like a 1990s like anti-drug PSA, where it's like, we've got all your favorite cartoon characters in the room at the same time to tell you not to buy pot on the street from kids with backwards baseball hats.
That being said, I don't think it'll be that successful because the market has clearly shown the kids and maybe even most people do not care about high fidelity. Remember, Neil Young had his Pono, which is supposed to be a higher quality MP3 player. People did not care at all. The fact is people want the cheapest music they can get, and they don't really care about quality because the fact is right now pop music is dominating and fidelity just really does not matter that much for modern pop music, particularly because it's so overproduced. You know, does a synth sound any different at CD quality or top quality or wave quality or MP3 quality? Not really, you know. And as we've discussed before, music right now is incredibly transient in that people will listen to a song a whole bunch in a week or 2 weeks or a month, and then just forget about it forever. Most music buyers do not buy music to last and enjoy. It's really just ear candy for a temporary amount of time. So I don't think this will change the world or anything like you're saying it was. Will it make more money for artists? Doubtful. I mean, like, I'd have to look at, like, their actual pay structure. But just because it's owned by several rich artists doesn't mean that artists that are contracted will get paid any more money than RDO or Spotify or anything.
I mean, that's the biggest bullshit thing to me is that I don't buy the whole artist owned thing, because yeah, it's owned by, like, you know, these 30 artists or whoever were in the room that were already millionaires. I don't really feel any better about giving money to Jay-Z than I would to Walmart, right? Like, yeah. To me, there's no more virtue if I'm giving money to a multi-million, you know, like a multi-million accruing media personality who is at this point no longer a person but is like a managed brand. There's no more, you know, I don't feel any more virtuous giving them money than I would just, you know, or than I would fucking RDO or Spotify or anything like that. Like, that's, so I don't buy that. And I'm just, you know, completely just talking out of my ear on this one because I don't actually know what the truth is here. I really doubt that all of the artists that are going to have music on this store are somehow going to get an ownership share. So if the aforementioned Obits put their music on the Tidal store, I don't think Rick Froberg becomes an owner of Tidal. Maybe he does, but even if he did, if all of those bazillion artists are going to become owners of the company, they probably still don't get much of a share compared to what they would have got on RDO or Spotify. I think it's streaming is a shit revenue stream one way or another, and I don't think that you can, I don't know, I don't think you can dress it up and make it high def like this and all of a sudden it's like, oh hey, it's lucrative.
Okay, so I've a little bit to say. Let's see. God, where do I want to start with this? I think the difference between the Neil Young situation and this is there was a little bit of hope a few months ago, okay? A little bit of hope when it came to the streaming stuff. I won't go near this shit. There's no way. There's no way in fuck you will get me to pay $9.99 to stream music. That's not going to happen. But something interesting happened when it came to, in my view, when it came to a possible market shift for streaming music. And that is, and I hate to bring her up, but Taylor Swift took her whole discography off the streaming sites like Pandora and Spotify. She just took them off. And a lot, and that was pretty cool. And what I would love to see, I think it's highly unlikely, but I think if Tidal is really going to be paying artists more, like they say they are, and I'd love to see how much they're paying them, if there's a massive amount of artists just ditched Spotify and Pandora and went with them, you'll see a massive transition. I think you'll get a lot of people paying for it because, especially if they sign exclusive deals with Tidal. That being said, I don't know if that'll happen, but if you do, if that does happen, you'll also see shares of Pandora. And is Spotify a public company now? I think it is. Anyway, you'll see those shares just go down. And I think if Tidal can really prove that they can pay artists more for streaming, a substantial amount of more per play, I don't see why any artist wouldn't go to them if it's a good system and everything. My question is, if you pay $9.99 a month, will there still be ads with Tidal, or does that entitle you to not be to get ad free? That being said, though, again, I will not pay for streaming music like per month. To me, that's almost like you're paying off a debt, and that's just does not sit well with me. I much rather would own my music on vinyl. I just like vinyl a lot more. And the best case scenario for me is I get the vinyl and a little download code or the CD with it, to give me the MP3 so I can just, you know, go to the gym and listen to the album.
Well, let me come at that same thing, but just come up the middle. So I'm not going to be on the extreme here. So yeah. I do pay for a streaming service every month. I have an audio subscription.
Okay.
And for me, there is, and I think this is where, I think this is why so much of this of like the streaming versus not argument falls apart for me, is because for me, this is a service that serves a certain wedge in my life. So if I like something, yeah, I'm going to go buy it on vinyl because I want the vinyl. I want the physical product. I want to actually support the band by giving them money. I'm under no illusion that anyone gets paid for me having like a $4.50 a month audio subscription or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. But that said, I used to be back in the day, I don't even know if it's around anymore, but like I used to be an eMusic subscriber, and eMusic was like an actual download service. You would get like, I forget what it was, you get 30 or 50 or something MP3s that you can download out of their catalog every month, and you would actually get the files. And I was doing that for a while, but partly because it was cheaper than iTunes, but part of the problem was just like I was just accruing all of these files at this point. Mm-hmm. I had to like buy hard drive space and back this shit up and just like make this giant catalog of stuff. But I know it was all shit. Like if I'm like I know that the value in those MP3s was not in like I have no emotional investment in them. They're not necessarily a good quality. They're not like a good fidelity version of this song. Like I, it was just basically shit that I had to store somewhere, right? So for me, the streaming service was useful because, like, if I'm gonna go to my office, I can go to my office and fire up RDO and pull up the Ramones discography and listen to 8 different Ramones albums, and you know, it's almost like radio. Like I have no illusion that I own that stuff, but at the same point, I'm not toting around a whole bunch of files. And I know it probably sounds like shit, but I'm in my office and I'm listening to it on shitty computer speakers and I'm not listening to it that loud because other human beings are in my office. So, like, to me, it fills, like, a niche there. And I feel that, like, me doing that isn't necessarily taking food out of the mouth of a band I could have bought the CD from, because I wouldn't have gone, like, the alternative is not that I would have went out and bought a bunch of $20 CDs to do the same thing. Like, the alternative is that I would have listened to the radio or done something else. So for the streaming services, for me, they do have their place where they exist. But like for me, it's not a place where I'm looking for high fidelity. Like I don't want to pay like 2 or 3 times what I'm paying to get better quality sounding versions of shit on Tidal. Because if I want to listen to something and really be engaged with it, I'm going to go put the record on the record player and the decent speakers and the amp and all the things that I bought to make that stuff sound good. And I'll experience the music that way. I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for that experience out of the streaming service that I use to listen to like medium volume shit in my office. Like so to me, like I guess like where I'm just seeing it as like Tidal doesn't sell a product that I need, and I'm well aware that I'm dealing with like a shitty fidelity version of stuff, but that's fine. It's filling the void that I needed to fill. It's really easy for me to write off Jay-Z talking about this stuff because I don't care what Jay-Z does. It's been harder for me to write off like Neil Young. Yeah, it's been hard for me to write off like Neil Young's arguments about this stuff. But like as much as I love Neil Young, he's still full of shit with a lot of this stuff too. Where like I don't think he gets it. Where like the digital music stuff is filling the void. It's not taking over, in my mind at least, it's not taking over the void of like, you know, oh, this is what people are doing now instead of like having like high fidelity audio systems in their house. Like, no, like people that want high fidelity audio systems, they're probably going to go out and buy that. Like there's no shortage of stereo equipment in the world that you can go buy. This is filling the void from fucking FM and AM radio.
Here's why I disagree slightly, Adam, and that's the vast majority of music consumers are not high-end fidelity people. So what streaming services do is they supply just, you know, easy to get, easy access music, whereas those listeners, were there no streaming services, would have bought the CD, would have downloaded a higher quality MP3, but now because the cheaper, shittier version is available, they'll just take that. They don't really care.
Well, what you're leaving out is, or they would have stolen it.
Well, true.
Well, I mean, how much are these artists really getting paid from them anyway? I think it's a matter of convenience. I mean, here's the thing. The difference between the three of us and everyone else, I guess, Punk News and probably listening to this, is that we are conscious music fans. We don't just want, you know, we don't just want the easiest way of getting it necessarily. You at least have the good sense, like, if you want to support a band, I'll go get it. Most of these people are not doing that.
True.
The millions of listeners, I can tell you, my brother and sister uses Spotify. She doesn't, my brother and sister do not give a shit about vinyl. And I don't even think they're thinking about paying for music, really.
But here's my question is, like, are they using Spotify instead of buying CDs, or are they using Spotify instead of going on LimeWire and downloading it? I don't even know if LimeWire exists anymore. Wherever kids get shit these days, torrents.
I think it's probably Napster. Both. It's probably both. But right. I mean, either way, the artist isn't getting paid.
I feel that we keep forgetting that, like, hey, remember the whole piracy thing?
Yeah.
That was going on. Well, like,
it's still there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
Anyways,
I think it really depends if you're a conscious music fan or if you're not. If you don't care. Again, me, I just got the new Teenage Bottle Rocket album came in the mail. It was perfect. I spent $15 on the Tricolor album, and it came with the CD. That for me was fine, and I got to own it, and I don't need to worry about paying for it the next month.
Well, there you go, people. That's the Ricky Franco explanation. So we got a lot of articles left. You guys want to do an extended version tonight? Do you guys want to push these till next week? What do you guys want to do?
Let's push. We've talked a lot about a few topics. I mean, we can. I don't know. You want to do something fun? You want to set like a 5-minute stopwatch, and we'll see how many of these we can get through.
Well, I want to do justice to a lot of these, honestly.
I got time.
Yeah, well, I think Adam's got a baby though, right?
Oh, my kid's asleep. It's like 10:45.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, keep going.
I'm down to keep. Well, tell you what, Adam, you let us know. I don't mean to put pressure on you, but I'm down to keep rolling. But Ricky, anytime you got to go, Adam, anytime you got to go, well, just let me know, and let's play
the poor listeners a song so that they're not.
Yeah, check this out, man. Cassette, baby. You hear that? You guys hear that? You hear that? That's the sound of physical right there. Listen to that wonderful. That wonderful sound. That's physical, baby. I saw this band out in San Francisco. The band's called Quaaludes or Quaaludes, however you pronounce it. They're a really cool band. They're pretty new. They've got a cassette out and a 7-inch. And I spoke to the lead singer, and I'm afraid I don't know her name. Her name is Amy. And she said, and I know that because I've got the physical, and I just opened it up and looked at that. And she said that they're working on an LP. It's going to be out on Thrill House Records, I believe. And that they're just a cool band. I guess you could say they're inspired by the first wave of San Francisco punk rock. A little bit more to that than that. But let's play one of their tracks off their 7-inch. It's called Stiff Little Single. It's a cool track. The band is called Quaaludes. And I think you should check them out. That's Quaaludes out of San Francisco. Stiff Little Single.
Yeah.
back, let's talk about another band out in the Bay Area, Ceremony. They've just released two songs from their fifth album. The album is called The L-Shaped Man. It follows 2012's Zoo. And basically, it follows off what Ceremony's been driving through ever since their beginning. When Ceremony first started, they were kind of a power violence band. Then by their third album, Ronette Park, they were kind of a classically hardcore band. And I love the album Ronette Park. The next album, Zoo, was kind of more wire-ish, if you will, or post-punk. And now they've got this new album called The L-Shaped Man. And there's two songs that they've released from it. And I got to say, the two songs are I dug them a lot. To me, they sounded very much Joy Division-ish, and I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean that positively. They're very actually they're extremely heavy, extremely mid-tempo, very icy, very cold, and they remind me quite a bit of Joy Division. I know that Andy of Ceremony's in the band. He also has a band called Dark Blue, which is very directly influenced by Joy Division. Interestingly, frontman Ross Farrar of Ceremony has said that the new album is influenced by his breakup, and I find that interesting that Ceremony, the band, of course, is named after the very last Joy Division song, Ceremony, and the end of Joy Division was because of a breakup. And it seems at this point that Ceremony has gotten past like all their "you're not power violence anymore" naysayers, and people are interested. I dug this. Did you guys check out any of these tracks?
I haven't heard this at all. I'm fairly unaware of Ceremony, so you're describing them to me in a way that I need to hear.
Ceremony's cool, but here's another question. I'm a very big Ceremony fan. They're probably my favorite modern hardcore band, even though the new album probably isn't technically hardcore. But how come artsy punk bands very rarely get nastier sounding, and usually they become more listenable? Why is that? I can only think of one hardcore band that started out nasty and got nastier.
I think it might just be I'm not saying it like negatively, but it might just be a maturity thing. Artist, I think just, you know, they do that. You can only really do the hardcore thing so much until it gets tired. Depending on how you execute it, but that's what I've been finding with punk bands in general. Look at the, and this isn't a hardcore band, but look at the evolution of Against Me from like the acoustic EP to now. So you see, like, I think it's just a matter of transitioning, because I don't think they want to keep doing the same exact same thing all the time.
Keep going.
Oh yeah, now I've heard about Ceremony a lot, and I listened to a track, I guess, just to see what they were like on the Ronette Park album. Where would you, John, suggest starting with them?
Ronette Park. I mean, unless you're a power violence guy, Ronette Park. I think Ronette Park is one of the best hardcore records of all time. I would probably put it in top 20 hardcore records. I love Ronette Park, and it's exactly the kind of hardcore album that I want. It's got some, you know, kind of Black Flag-ish bashing tunes. It's got some ambient weird songs. It's got a couple like just classic punk sounds, and the lyrics are just so great and so punk rock and kind of nihilistic. I love Ronette Park. A lot of the quote purists say that's kind of where they fell off. I think that's where they became extra special.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, just to answer why bands get less hard, I guess, as they go, which, oh man, that's a weird sex pun. I'm sorry. I have to say it's because, like, even though you're a hard band, you're still playing rock and roll, right? So you're playing in a genre that has this fairly well-established history and tradition to it, and you know, classical forms of songwriting that are widely acknowledged as being good. And you can, you know, you can sit there and wail on a guitar and scream for a while and get all the catharsis out. But if you're going to keep doing that as a career, at some point you're going to be sitting there with the guitar and going like, "Hey, I can do all kinds of things with the guitar." And, you know, while yes, I was, you know, screaming and ragey when we started this, no, I can play these songs by the birds now. And hey, I kind of like this, and I'm going to start writing. Like, you know, it's just, I think it's like you naturally go down that path. Like now, if you started your hardcore band, you were playing with like nothing but power tools, where there is no tradition of like taking, you know, like a circular saw and, you know, writing a folk tune with it. Then, well, at that point, you just fucking have a circular saw, so you keep going down your path, or you build a house.
Adam, are you making a reference to a certain band?
No.
Oh, there's a band that did that.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
There's the German band, Eichstrasende Neobaden. Like, that's what they're famous for.
Did they get less hard?
Yes, they did, eventually.
Were they exclusively playing with power tools?
They did for a while, yes.
Fucking John. Next story.
Now, this is interesting too. This is Hardcore Fest. Philadelphia's This is Hardcore Fest has announced its 10th annual festival. This one is supposed to be like the big one. It's the 10th. Every year Philadelphia has this big hardcore festival. This year is The Exploited paying their first U.S. show in 10 years. Snapcase, American Nightmare, Chokehold, Cro-Mags, Bane, Negative Approach, H2O, Nails, All Out War, Slapshot, Zabalba, Wisdom in Chains, Twitching Tongue, Code Orange, Power Trip, and perhaps most polarizing, The Misfits playing all of Earth AD. And when we say The Misfits, we mean Jerry Only, Des Cadena, and Eric Archie.
I have questions. Why are the Misfits at a hardcore?
Well, to be fair, This is Hardcore Fest usually has a few non-strictly hardcore bands. And you could say the Misfits are hardcore because Earth AD is a hardcore record, you know. But they've had Guar, they've had Trypticon, they've had Sleep. So, you know, I appreciate that This is Hardcore Fest isn't strictly NYHC, you know.
That's interesting. It seems like the Misfits are doing this. They're playing like this is like a summer theme they're doing. Playing like their best albums all the way through. I'm going to a show on Santa Ana. I think it's like in June or late May, and they're doing like three shows at the Observatory in Santa Ana, where they're doing like Earth AD, Static Age, and Walking Among Us, but like three nights in a row. I'm going to the Static Age one, but it seems like they're doing that.
Interesting choice. Static Age. Interesting.
Yeah, I want to hear Bullet Life, like, real badly. And then they're going to be... And then what I would... And then apparently they're doing, like best of after it. Best of songs. And then Cro-Mags... I know, John. I think I saw them on... Was that Valentine's? It was Valentine's Day. Yeah, I saw them on Valentine's Day. Only 40-minute set
for headlining. It's the Cro-Mags. That 40
minutes. It was awesome. I'm not saying it was awesome, but like only 40 minutes?
Well, it's a hardcore show, you know?
I guess. I mean, it was cool nonetheless. This is a cool lineup for this. I would go if I were in Philly. This would be kind of something. But yeah.
All right, well, let's since we're talking about fests here, I suppose we should mention it. Not really a lot to say right now, except that the dates have been announced for Fest 14 down in Gainesville. They're basically what you'd expect, because they don't really move too much each year. But it's going to take place on October 30th to November 1st, 2015. The first wave of band announcements and all that stuff is coming. So, you know, at some point soon, we're going to talk about Fest a lot.
I want to go so fucking badly.
I would love to go back. I keep having children, but, you know, I would love to go back.
If we may revisit the Misfits briefly, you know, I've generally been a fan of the new Misfits. I'm saying, yeah, I mean, it's not really the Misfits, but it's Des Cadena and Jerry Only doing Black Flag and Misfits tunes, and it's cool. But for some reason, Jerry Only and Des Cadena and Eric Archie doing all of Earth AD seems wrong to me, even though I generally support the new Misfits. You guys don't have to answer that. Maybe we can ask the podcast listeners. Why does John think that's weird or not proper? That's podcast@punknews.org. Or if you guys want to answer it, you can.
I have a question to answer your question, though.
Yeah.
What about them doing songs where when Michael Graves was in this the band? Is that weird, too?
If with Michael Graves, if they did all of Earth AD, that would be really weird. Yeah.
But what if they did all American Psycho?
No, that's cool because, I mean, that's that band.
Okay. I don't know. I'll report in after I see the show.
Yeah. Do that. So do you guys want to wrap it up, or do you guys want to talk about our two last wacky stories we got here? Well, let's blast through this one quickly, and then I'll let Adam make the coffee once to do the last wacky story we got. Mischief Brew, they released a new track. The track is called No Candlesticks. It's from their upcoming LP called This Is Not For Children. I'm a huge Mischief Brew fan. I think this new track rocks, and I think it probably I have not heard the new album, but I think this song is basically lets us know what the new album will sound like. It's got some anarcho-punk texture to it, and maybe some just classic Mischief Brew-style punk rock. It's energetic, heavy, it swings, but it doesn't have like the older Mischief Brew folky stuff to it. I know some people like Mischief Brew for their folky stuff, and I like that too, but honestly, I think Mischief Brew is at its most powerful when they're juiced up, electric, and rocking, and I think this tune rocks, and I'm super excited for the new album.
Yeah, the song is really good. It's fun, and it's, you know, I can't, you know, make a huge comparison to the earlier Mr. Brew stuff, but I enjoy this. I think that, like, anyone that's, you know, even though we disparaged them earlier, like, the Orgcore people should totally be into this. So,
yeah. If I haven't done myself, like John attacks most of the listeners' favorite bands for 45 minutes. He's like, oh, but you guys would like this.
You would. So, you know, even if you're really mad at John right now, check this out. You'll probably like it.
I don't know if I just haven't put enough time into this and sat down with it. It's not, I don't hate it. I'm just not seeing what you guys are seeing in it yet, I guess.
Listen to the album, The Stone Operation. And like this album is very much a sequel to The Stone Operation, it seems like to me. The Stone Operation is, if you will, if you ask me, The Stone Operation is to Mischief Brew what Ronet Park was for Ceremony. It's where the band made a quantum leap, holding on to some of their older stuff, but doing a whole lot of new stuff too. So Ricky, you should check out the album, The Stone Operation, and you can hear it on Bandcamp for free, mischiefbrew.bandcamp.com.
Cool.
Well, I guess we'll make quick mention of this last story here. So Ben Stiller's punk album is to be reissued. Before he was a famous actor, Ben Stiller was in high school. And in high school, he started a punk band, as you do. That punk band was called Capital Punishment. They had a very limited release album that they put out called Roadkill. Captured Tracks, which is a what is Captured Tracks, John? Is it the label or they?
Is Captured Track is a label that specializes in reissuing rare but interesting music.
All right, so Captured Tracks
from their perspective, yeah. You know what I mean?
All right, yeah. So they're really re-releasing the album this fall. It's going to be remastered. It's going to have bonus tracks in case you know your copy of Capital Punishment didn't have those tracks earlier. So you can hear a song, the remastered version of which, called Confusion, out on Punk News right now. So this is from Ben Stiller's punk band in 1982, playing some kind of gothy stuff. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this, even though we are running really long. I totally can't get away from hearing Ben Stiller's voice do it, and that makes it jokey to me. But you know,
Ben Stiller's not singing though.
I don't know, but I'm listening to it and I'm hearing Ben Stiller. I'm seeing Ben Stiller. It's coloring my whole perception of this. I mean, like,
it's definitely like on stage.
Yeah, like, so remastering aside, this kind of, you know, this sounds like a, you know, this sounds like kind of a kid's high school band in the, as far as recording goes, so it's not going to be, it's not a huge revelation that you've never heard before. It's not going to blow you away or anything like that, but, you know, I can't hate on it. He's a kid. He had a punk band. That's cool.
Yeah, the readers were really the commenters were really hating on this, and I thought it was, I mean, it's not the greatest thing ever, but it's kind of gothy, it's kind of new wave, it's kind of hardcore. I thought it's interesting. I probably won't buy this, but this certainly was not any worse than the majority of music that gets submitted to Punk News, and I don't mean that negatively. I mean, you know, this is just kind of punk rock, you know. I was kind of stamping my thumbs to it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I hated this. This was just like the worst. It just like it had all the worst parts of new wave and like early goth in it. So I only made it like a minute of the way through. I'm like, I don't need to keep doing this to myself. But I don't know. I wonder if he even knows about this. And I want to know, like, what was he playing in there?
A guitar.
Oh, he was. Okay. I want to know what I would be interested to seeing, like, who buys this and how many were sold. This is something for me. This is something to skip, in my opinion.
It's weird that it exists, and I appreciate that fact.
that is fine. I don't think it sounds good. It's just like
It definitely doesn't sound good.
Here's what I can totally hear happening. Okay, they're in a band. They're in high school. They're listening to all this new stuff in 1981-2, and they find all these parts that they like, and they combine it into something, and that's how you get song Confusion. I think it was a little bit derivative of what was really going on, and that's why I don't think it's that good.
I think you guys all need to go back, listen to music about drinking and why you should keep drinking with your friends and get drunk and not move forward in your life. I'll listen to Ben Stiller, and me and Ben Stiller will go out and have a good time and you know, go on a roller coaster ride or something.
All right, this has been the longest episode of the Punk News Podcast ever. We're not going to wait anymore. If anyone wants to email us, it is podcast@punknews.org, and that's how you get rid of us. We'll talk to you all next week. Goodbye.